Well, hi again. This is Bob Brundage, and today is the 22nd of June in 2003.
Right century, Bob.
Yeah, I started this project way back in 1996, believe it or not. But today we're outside of Albuquerque, New Mexico, and we're talking to Paul Moore from the San Diego, California area. And he is on his way through to the Oklahoma City National Convention. And very graciously invited me over for dinner, and I wanted to find out a little bit more about Paul and Mary and their activities and the square dancing, round dancing, contra dancing, and so forth. So let's start, Paul, the way I usually do, with where you were born and brought up, and we'll kind of take it from there.
Where I was born and brought up is a wide subject. I was born in Oak Park, Illinois,
okay,
in 1945, just about 8 months before the war was over, and so I don't qualify as a baby boomer. Lived there for just 2 years, and then my dad was released from his job, where he'd been frozen during the war, and he went back to college to get his master's degree. That made us move to the Boston area. And that's probably where I came into my first contact with square dancing, is that my older sister loved to square dance, and we had a set of the old Decca square dance records, you know, the ones that had the gingham,
yeah,
the red and white gingham cover on it.
That's right.
And my dad took photographs, or not photographs, but 16 millimeter films,
uh-huh,
of people dancing. He just always liked watching that, but really didn't get involved at that point. From there, we moved to New Jersey with dad's job change again, and then to Scottsdale, Arizona with another job change, back to Motorola for my father. And at that point, I got involved not only in athletics, but I was involved with school choir, and the school always put on a musical. And since I was one of the more coordinated and one of the stronger guys who was willing to do it, I ended up being lead dancer in some of the shows, and that led to me getting a scholarship to a ballet studio.
There you go.
But then as soon as I was out of high school, then went my dancing, you know, off to college, and stayed with athletics. And even after I graduated and started teaching high school English, I was coaching basically year-round, and also teaching for a local community college at night. Now, 1 year, the night class didn't go, and Mary said that there's a square dance in the next little community over here. Why don't we go give it a try? She didn't tell me it was a first night of lessons or anything. She just, you know, it's a square dance, give it a try. And we went down, and we got hooked. And from then on, we joined a second class so that we could really get the basics under control. And we danced 2 to 7 nights a week for the next 4 or 5 years. And
there you go.
We slowed down, and then about 5 years after we started, Mary saw an advertisement for a collar school, and she gave that to me as a birthday present, and I'm sure she has regretted it ever since, because what started off just to be thinking of, you know, maybe I'd teach one class a year or something like that,
true,
has ended up being something like 160 to 180 nights a year.
Right.
And keeps seeming to grow the distances I travel and the number of nights I'm out and so forth.
Right. Where along this way did you run into Mary, and where did you get married and so forth?
We both went to the University of Redlands.
I see.
Southern California.
Yeah.
She was a year behind me, but something that they did every year at the university was they turned out a freshman picture book. So that, and it was intended for faculty and for the freshmen, so they could become acquainted with classmates and students.
Right.
And Mary had an absolutely gorgeous photograph from her senior graduation picture.
Right.
And she also happened to be rooming with a friend from the high school that I had gone to.
Right.
And so we met, and so what?
One thing led to another.
But, well, actually, not at that point.
I see.
We met each other. We could be friendly. But then finally, 6-8 months later, I had access to a friend's car, way to get off campus for the one of the first times of the year. And he said, what the heck? I'll ask Mary if she'll go with me. And we went all the way over to the next town, 10 miles, to see Mary Poppins.
All right.
And since we both love Mary Poppins, that's what really got us hooked.
Okay.
And we still think about that, and we feel like we're in that room where everybody starts laughing and floating off the ground.
Okay. Right. Well, that's an interesting story. Tell me along the line, then, following your college school, you went back home and started a class, I assume.
It didn't happen right away.
Right away.
But I kept doing my homework, you know, listening to, particularly listening to hoedowns, and beginning to figure out what the structure of the music is and timing. And then there were some senior citizens nearby who wanted to have their own little group, and they knew that they weren't ready to keep up with the regular club. So they asked me to come down, and would I teach, and sure, you know, I'll do it for just for the gate.
Yeah.
The night that they paid $1 apiece or something like that.
Right.
So I'd go home with sometimes as much as $10 on
right.
it.
Right, okay. Getting into the big time now.
But it led to not much later getting first booking with a regular club.
Right.
And then after I'd been calling for a year and a half or so, a couple of other clubs asked me to be their instructor, and I know I did a terrible job of calling, but I did teach the dancers well, and so they were successful when they went off to dances, and I'm still calling for one of those. Actually, the two clubs joined together
right.
to become one, and still calling for them.
Yeah,
something like
great.
20 years later.
That's great. Did you come from a musical family at all? I mean, did you have a musical background at all?
Neither one of my parents played an instrument or sang or anything like that, but they made sure that there was always good music in the home. We went to musical programs, and of course, you know, church choirs and so forth. Older sister played accordion. My older brother played trumpet. But I had never really thought about doing anything with music until I got in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And each class in the high school, you know, the seniors,
yeah.
juniors, freshmen, so
right.
forth, had to put on a show for the whole school.
Okay.
And sophomore year, friend and I decided we were going to take Gilbert and Sullivan's Mikado.
Oh, wow.
From 2.5 hours down to 45 minutes.
Right.
And we kept, just the most famous tunes.
Yeah.
And maybe only once, through a set of lyrics or the chorus. And it was so much fun that I then got into the choir and into performing in musicals, mm-hmm. and then in college stayed with a choir, which at that point had a recording contract with Columbia Records,
there
Columbia Masterwork. And so even if I wasn't actively performing, I was,
right.
Kept close to it. Also, I'd done, the folk music thing back in the 60s and 70s.
Okay. Well, the reason I ask you that, because I know that you've gotten very interested in your lifetime about contras, which requires some musical knowledge, and I know you practice it very well, and that's the main reason I brought that up. Tell me about who are some of your mentors over the years who kind of helped you through.
Well, the first one I'd have to give credit to would be the very first teacher I had.
Okay.
Who is, he remained local because he had his daytime job.
He
had his own plumbing company. But he had an absolutely marvelous voice, superb timing, just great sense of body flow,
mm-hmm.
and was always a gentleman on the microphone, treated his people well.
Right.
And so he's the one who first taught Mary and me how to dance. And then later was very encouraging on the calling.
Okay, and what was his name?
His name was Bill Gibson.
Okay.
And he bought DNR Records at one point and produced two records on his own, both of which sold extremely well. But he moved on to other things and no longer called.
Whose caller school was it you went to?
It was the... the local callers club called Cow County's Callers Association.
Okay.
And we had 17 weeks of lessons that lasted 3 to 4 hours each.
Okay.
And
that's a good way to do it.
There were, I think, 8 of us in the class, and we had something like 25 instructors. Every member of the Callers Association
took part
in it, you know, in presentation. And then they all critiqued us when we had mic time.
Yeah.
And they would fill in the squares, so we'd always have people to dance, you know, to call to.
Right. Well, that's great.
And
well, have you taken on any other caller schools after that? And you got into it a little more?
No, I did not attend any more formal
caller
schools, but I worked one-on-one with. Johnny Scott, who was a recording artist with Prairie Records.
Okay.
And we spent a lot of time working on things. And then wherever I could, you know, talking with callers at festivals,
right.
you know, really working on, you know, what needs to be improved.
Yeah. Okay, well, tell me how you got into Contras.
We went to a festival. Before I started calling, and at that festival, Bob Ruff, who was one of the Hall of Fame callers, was doing an hour session on contra dancing. We'd never heard of it, we'd never seen it before, but we said, what the heck, you know, let's give it a try. And from the very first dance, which as I recall was all the way to Galway,
mm-hmm.
we were hooked. And so we would hunt down contra dancing wherever we could find it. Limited choices in Southern California. Bob Ruff did some. Hal Rice and Leif Hetland seemed to be the three that we could locate.
Right.
And all three were very encouraging and saying, you ought to give it a try. And at one of Hal Rice's dances, he put me on after giving me fair warning.
Yeah.
And said, you know, be prepared to do a contra dance. And it went very well. And then by this time I was calling squares, and square dancers knew that I was contra dancing. So can you teach us to contra dance? And that led into a contra dance club.
Good.
That danced twice a month.
Mm-hmm.
And they... of course, forced me to keep doing research because they didn't want to do the same 8 or 9 dances every time.
That's interesting. And that group is still dancing, probably?
We lost the dance hall
to a
group that was willing to pay for 4 nights a month instead of just 2.
Yeah.
And so there was a little gap in there. But a square dance club decided that... of the 2 dances a month, one would be rounds. The second one, they would have contras between square dance tips. And so I did that, and that led into starting a new group, which has been going since 1986.
Great.
And still going strong.
Great.
We started dancing in the school cafeteria, but we couldn't use it in the summertime, so we moved to an Elks Lodge. On the only night of the month they had free, they were very happy to rent it. They gave us a deal on the rent, and we've been there for 15 years.
Oh, good. Well, who are some of the people that you've worked with over the years? And I know you're associated with, you have your own country weekend down in San Diego. Probably before you got that started, were you on staff of some of any of the other weekends? Or how about festivals and like that?
California State Square Dance Convention.
Yeah.
I was there usually every year.
Yeah.
Our local dancer association put on a square dance and round dance festival, and so they opened up space for contra dancing there. The San Diego weekend had been started by Joe McMiniman and Hal Rice and Leif Hetland. And Hal and Leif left for the second year of it. So Joe was, you know, running around, you know, who can I get to fill in? So he got hold of me and Glenn Nickerson. And we staffed it for the next, three or four years. Then Joe McMiniman pulled out. I think the stress of wondering if you're going to have enough attendees got to him.
Right.
So we contacted Don Armstrong, and he came on to staff for 5 years. Then ran into a timing conflict, and so for a couple of years we alternated who the third caller was.
Mm-hmm.
And then we latched on to Grant Logan, and that's who we still have.
And Grant is from Canada. Yeah, well, those are certainly great credentials. And Glenn is still with you too?
No, Glenn pulled out about 4 years ago.
Okay.
You know, it's slowing down
the
amount of calling that he was doing.
Yeah.
He and Flo still make the trip down to dance with us.
Really? Okay.
But as I say, we've rotated. We've used Don Ward from Southern California.
Right.
And Ron Johnson, who has had to retire from calling because of business problems.
Oh, I didn't know that. He
had to spend more time back at the job, otherwise.
Yeah. I see.
It's where the hobby got in the way of the job.
Yeah. What about national conventions?
Oh. Been to 10 of them, I think. Something. The first one was 1987 in Houston. And just was, you know, one of 30 callers on staff. You know, had my two or three spots. And,
yeah.
But got to meet people like Bill Johnson and Tony Parks, Mona Cannell, Boyd Rothenberger, you know, a number of people who
were
very, very talented.
Right.
But we also saw some people who weren't so talented and learned probably as much from that example as the good example.
Sure, right.
And then the 1988, Art Harvey and I were basically in charge of the Contra program for the National in Anaheim.
Yes.
And then when the National came back in 2001, then I was in charge of the Contra program for that.
Okay.
And then I've programmed California State Convention 10, 12 times, something like that.
Right. So, well, I mentioned, got off the subject for just a second, I mentioned round dancing one time. Have you been involved in round dancing at all, or just as a dancer?
We danced for a while, and then I said, you know, it would be a good idea to have two or three rounds just in case.
Right,
and so I started off with, you know, ones that were relatively simple that, you know, I knew it could be successful with.
Yeah.
So I did, you know, Frenchie Brown and Tips of My Fingers,
right.
St. Louis Blues.
Okay.
And it's, these are fun. And so now I've expanded up to around 30 or 40 round dances that I can cue.
Yeah.
And on occasion have had to fill in for a round dance cue who couldn't make it to a dance.
Right. I assume you don't try to keep up with all the new round dances that come out every month.
I do not buy the round of the month.
No, right.
You know, if I'm there, it's what's in my record case is what they get to dance.
That's what they get to dance, right. I was pretty much the same way, actually. But, well, it's all very interesting now. I know you've been involved in other weekends, and we want to get around to that. Let's see, I don't think we're getting down near the end of the tape yet. So beside the one that you've been involved with in San Diego for some time, now you're involved. Well, we had to stop long enough to turn the tape over, and we were just about to start talking about the weekend you're involved with now in York, Pennsylvania. You mentioned Bill Johnston and Don Armstrong earlier, and I know you were there at that New Year's weekend as a dancer before you got on the staff. So tell us about your experiences with York.
Well, we had gone three times as dancers. Glenn Dickerson told us about it and said it's really worth going to sometime, and he sort of held us our hands as we went the first time, and it was kind of awe-inspiring to walk into the room, and and here's Bill Johnston and Don Armstrong, and I still had my orange teacher manual under my arm, and of course the great Dick Ledger was on staff at that time, and knew about him because of the work he did with Collar Lab on,
sure,
on the timing,
right,
and to have those three come out of their way to speak to me and encourage me. Met Deco Deck back there, and we still keep up a really friendly bit of communications going, and I thought what a marvelous venue this would be to call, but there's no chance, these guys are going to last forever. Next thing we know is that Dick Ledger has passed away, and they brought in Grant Logan, and then Bill Johnston passed away, and they brought in Stu Shacklett, and then finally when Don passed away, they surprised the heck out of me. Here comes the phone call from Grant, and would I like to be the third on staff at York? And learned a lot by getting up on that stage of, reading the crowd, what kinds of dances they like to do, what kind of music they like to dance to. And I think it's really matured me tremendously to call to dancers who know, some of them know more than I do. How I got on stage instead of some of them, I'll never understand.
Well, it's a great, as you say, it's a great venue, and it's a great weekend. I know I went there several years. My brother and his dancing partner have been going, and always enjoyed it. It was a great thrill, really.
I think that was the first place I met Alice.
And
was
up there. That's the first place I met you, I think. And all right, well, and that's going along successfully. And as Stu Shacklett has recently suffered a stroke, so how are your plans for this year? Are you everything on hold, or just going to continue going the way it is?
The decisions on staffing are up to Barbara Johnston,
right,
and to Grant Logan.
Right.
And I think at this point they're just waiting to see how well Stu recovers.
Yeah.
And he does seem to be getting better day by day.
Yeah. I assume that's probably what we're
doing. And we're hoping that, by then he'll be, up and strong enough.
Right.
He may not be able to make it to the Kentucky Dance Institute this summer.
Yeah.
Or at least not to call at it.
Yeah.
But, I know he's not going to Oklahoma City.
Yes. No, I wouldn't suspect he would not, but, all right, well, a couple of other things I usually ask people that I chat with. Over the years, have you had any other hobbies?
I was involved in track and field for 25 years, both as a competitor and as a coach, and did fairly well. One of the few people who can probably remember running on the cinder track at the L.A. Coliseum, the same place that they had the 1932 Olympics. And just had a great time with that. Coached at high school for 16 years, and then overlapped square dance calling and coaching for 1 year, and realized something had to go. And 25 years of track and field was enough. And I liked the cooperative feeling of square dancing versus the competition of sports. So.
Yeah. But you don't have time for the frivolous stuff like golf that I do.
No. Mary threatened when I retired I was going to have to take up golf.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But I found another kind of a hobby. 2 days a week, I go to a place called Lighthouse for the Blind.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all adults, and most of them have lost their eyesight since they've been adults, really, because of diabetes or macular degeneration,
right.
Whatever. And they're all pretty intelligent people. They just need a comfortable place where they can go,
yes.
And manipulate and move around on their own, gain that confidence. So I go down twice a week, and we start off reading the headlines in the newspaper, and sometimes that's as far as we get in an hour and a half, is the headline of one article.
I'll be done.
Because then the conversation just takes off, and the questions, and maybe somebody over here knows an answer, otherwise it comes back to me, well, Paul, what do you think?
Yeah.
And I've had to learn so much about politics and economics over the last year to answer questions.
Nothing wrong with that, that's good.
And being a former English teacher, I'm now free to read the things that I didn't have time to read when I was grading papers.
That's interesting, because just recently I started playing golf with a man that is legally blind. We have to line him up, and he lost his sight just a couple of years ago, too. He's mm-hmm. thrilled to be back on the golf course. At one time, he was almost a scratch golfer, and very interesting. That's, well, a very noble project you have going there. Tell me, one of the things I've been asking people, where do you think square dancing has been, and where do you think it might be now, and where do you think it might be going? Let's get philosophical.
Well, we had that, I don't go far enough back to remember the Pappy Shaw days, but I've certainly met a lot of people who knew Pappy, trained under him, and with the popularity of the Cheyenne Mountain dancers, that there was a huge boom there at the late 40s, early 50s, probably a lot due to the servicemen who had danced during the war. This is something that they could do at their various bases. And then I think there was a back off during the 60s as new kinds of music were coming out and more youth activities. And then another big balloon of square dancing in the 70s.
Right.
Collar Lab came along to solve some of the problems that had been created with overly ambitious and creative callers who want keep inventing new figures. And Collar Lab helped with that as a problem. But I think in the 70s, people were looking at the number of dollars they could take home from square dance, calling a square dance. And you didn't really even have to be that good. There were so many people who wanted to dance.
Yeah.
And these guys quit their day jobs and tried to make a living calling. And they realized you can't do it just calling at night and on the weekends. That you have to have workshops and classes and so forth. Well, how do you attract people to classes? Well, you have to have new material all the time. And so, where there was no intention to have a ladder, you know, as Caller Lab says, these are not levels, these are programs. But the callers knew that if they wanted to make a living at it, they had to call classes at A1, A2,
yeah.
C1A, and yeah. so forth. Well, as dancers started disappearing in the early 80s, not through any fault of square dancing, I don't think, but more, there were other things to do. Right. And there are always fads. And square dancing had been a big fad for a while, and now it was time to slow down. And these guys who had quit their day jobs still wanted to be able to call that many sessions. Well, who's available to call to? And they went to the seniors. And in 3 or 4 years, they added 20 years to the age of the average square dancer.
Yeah.
And the image of square dancing now is it's something for old folks. And I think somewhere we're going to have to make that connection with youth again, with the enthusiasm, not the same old sounding music that we played in the 70s. I mean, Merle Haggard's a great singer, but he doesn't, you know, touch the hearts of kids who are
right.
18 years old.
True.
And so we need to reach out in that direction. Right now, I find square dancing is very fractionalized. That American Callers Association supposedly was only going to offer cheaper insurance and cheaper licensing. Then they came out with their one-floor square dancing program. Caller Lab has changed lists and philosophy. You have the country dance people who are a little bit younger, and they don't want any dress code, and they want live music all the time. We have the, quote, advanced dancers who think that unless you know 600 calls, you're not a good dancer, versus other people who are happy if I can dance 30 calls really well and dance them smoothly, I'm a better dancer than that guy who's rough with, 600 calls.
Right.
So we're going a lot of different directions, and maybe we'll go back to, dancing in our basements and our garages, and then somebody will say, hey, over in this neighborhood, let's see if we can get 2 or 3 of these groups together.
Yeah.
And we may build it all up again.
Right.
But I think it's too much fun to die. It's just going to change.
Yeah. Well, that's a good way to think about it. And I think I have a tendency to agree with you.
I was talking to Bob Howell, who says he still calls dances that he'd called, 40 years ago, and people loved them.
Sure.
The visiting couple things and Venus and Mars stars and that.
Yeah.
And I find I end up, some one-night stands and even club square dances and pull out some of this material and people go crazy over it.
Right.
And are actually now some places booking me for those types of dances rather than the contemporary,
right.
Mainstream or plus dances.
Yeah.
It's fun to see people smiling while they're dancing instead of worrying about what they're doing.
Right. Well, that's another question I usually ask is, looking back on your experiences, do you have any regrets, and is there anything you think you might wish you had done a little differently as you're going along?
It's so easy to get tied up to being in the spotlight up on the stage, and everybody loves you because you call a good dance and so forth. Go to a festival and, glad-handing everybody as you walk down the halls and so forth. And it's led to not paying enough attention to Mary. And, giving her a space in the activity, because when I started calling, she didn't have a partner anymore. Mm. And that's been really hard on her. And so, that's something I think we're finally now beginning to look at is, you know, this needs to be a shared activity. It can't be something that I just go off and do and leave her home. Or she has to sit there like a wallflower and smile at people all night long.
Sure. Right. Very interesting. So, it's been a great little session we've had here, Paul. I appreciate your having me over for dinner and also for taking the time to put your thoughts down on tape. And we'll get them into the archive and save them. Maybe someday, 100 years from now, somebody will go back and say...
Who in the world is that?
You're right. Probably. But I sincerely appreciate your time and efforts, and you've had a really nice, I know you have an excellent rapport with your dancers. I've watched you work more than once, and I love the way you work, and I'm sure your dancers do too.
So, I think the secret is make it fun for yourself.
True.
And your enthusiasm will carry across,
true.
And the dancers will probably have fun also.
That's true, yeah.
But I think this has been a real honor for me, just having you to dinner today would have been an honor.
Well, thank you very much.
Be on your tape is, with some of the people you've interviewed, is almost beyond belief.
Well, thank you very much. So we'll call it the end of the tape, and thank you again, and have a nice trip over to Oklahoma City and back to San Diego again. Thank you again, Paul.